Hello, this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you're in fact listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. In a country without saints or shrines, I knew one who made his pilgrimage to springs where in his life's dry years his mind held on. Everlasting people called them and gave them names. The water broke into sounds and shinings at the vein mouth, bearing the taste of the place, the deep rock, sweetness out of the dark. He bent and drank in bondage to the ground. Well, hello, this is Utah Phillips here, along with Steve Baker, who once again is pushing the slides there and making the electronics work. The wonderful music of the Borsdorfs. And yes, I did find out where Nancy and Jimmy are now, up there in the forest. I'm also here with my dog, Bo, since we'll be talking something about the wilderness. I decided to bring my dog. There ought to be at least more than one animal down here while we do this. The poem you just heard was from, of course, Wendell Berry. We are at radio station KVMR, Community Radio, Nevada City, California. Information and news and local affairs and good music, you see. Immediately following this show, for instance, our very own Haynes Ely will be interviewing hemorrhoid faith healer by the name of Adel Roberts. So you stay tuned, won't you? And we're here in Nevada City, as they say, California, a place that isn't exactly nowhere, but you can see it from here. Wilderness. That Wendell Berry said bondage to the ground, yes. Well, of course, gravity is a good part of that bondage, but bound in so many ways, or water, what we eat, what we live in, what we wear, all comes out of that wedding between our Mother Earth and the Father's Son. Bondage to the ground. Barry Lopez in 1976, the revolutionary bicentennial, took the time to write about the Western Hemisphere, about our side of the world, and say people came from Europe over here to get something. They kept coming in waves to get something, and we're still doing that. We're still looking at the place where we live as a place where you go to get something. Barry Lopez was saying, we haven't arrived yet. We haven't showed up yet. If we finally arrive, finally decide that this is, in our fact, our home and not just some place to get something, we may take care of it a whole lot better and trash it a whole lot less. My home, my emotional home, call it spiritual home if you want, the place where my soul is most at rest is in the Four Corners part of the United States in the Southwest, the Diné Nation, especially around El Capitan, what the Diné call Agathland, way out in the desert in the Red Rock there in Monument Valley. That's where I first met Ed Abbey. And Edward Abbey, you know, the Monkey Wrench Gang, he felt a desert solitaire, my favorite. He felt the same way about the Four Corners. And many times we would meet in small bars and smaller towns out there in that desert country and talk about wilderness. Mainly, he would ask me questions about the industrial workers of the world. Doesn't that seem odd? About direct action, about anarcho-syndicalism. And I didn't find out till much later on that a lot of those ideas that he was interested in were being molded into part of what became Earth First, the IWW, the environmental movement, the direct action part of the environmental movement. Well, we're going to listen to Ed Abbey and some songs about that. We're going to be talking about the wilderness, but I still have the feeling that the beginning of the wilderness is the end of words. Nonetheless, we're going to let Eddie Abbey talk about his boyhood, the urban wilderness. And then a song by old Bill Steele, a good friend of mine from Ithaca, New York, sung by Guy Carawan, called Garbage. Then back to Abbey again, that provoking, aggravating man talking about his wilderness. and then Walking Jim Stoltz. He must have logged about 30,000 miles walking through the wilderness, why they call him Walking Jim. And then he walks out with these wonderful songs, and we'll finish with Walking Jim doing Forever Wild. Let's listen to Ed Abbey.
When I lived in Hoboken, just across the lacquered Hudson River from Manhattan, we had all the wilderness we needed. There was the waterfront with its decaying piers and abandoned warehouses, the jungle of bars along River Street and Hudson Street, the houseboats, the old ferry slips, the mildew-green cathedral of the Erie Lackawanna Railway Terminal. That was back in 1964-65. Then came urban renewal, which ruined everything left lovable in Hoboken, New Jersey. What else was there? I loved the fens, those tawny marshes full of waterbirds, mosquitoes, muskrats, and opossums that intervened among the black basaltic rocks between Jersey City and Newark, and somewhere back of Union City on the way to gay, exotic, sausage-packing, garbage-rich Secaucus. I loved also, and finally and absolutely, as a writer must love any vision of eschatological ultimates, the view by twilight from the Pulaski Skyway, stop for emergency repairs only, of the seventh circle of hell. Those melancholy chemical plants, ancient as acid, sick as cyanide, rising beyond the cattails and tules. The gleam of oily waters in the refinery's red glare. The desolation of the endless, incomprehensible, uninhabitable, but inhabited slums of Harrison, Newark, Elizabeth. The haunting and sinister odors on the wind. Rust and iron and sunflowers in the tangled tracks. The great grimy sunsets beyond the saturated sky. It will all be made someday a national park of the mind, a rigid celebration of industrialism's finest frenzy.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato, leaves the bone and gristle, never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it with a cough, contaminates it, puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday, carts it all away. A thousand trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage. Garbage. We're filling up the sea with garbage. 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 What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage? Mr. Thompson starts his Cadillac, winds it down the freeway track, leaving friends and neighbors in a hydrocarbon haze. He's joined by lots of other cars, all sending gases to the stars. They're to form in a seething cloud that hangs for 90 days. The sun looks down into it, its ultraviolet tongues, till it turns to smog and settles down and ends up in our lungs. Oh, garbage. Garbage. We're filling up the air with garbage. Garbage. I don't think anybody feels too badly about it. Garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to breathe but garbage? Getting home and taking off his shoes, he settles down with the evening news while the kids do their homework with the TV in one ear. While Batman for the thousandth time helps sexy god dolls and conquers crime, the kids try to learn the date of birth of Paul Revere. There's a piece in the paper about Richard's latest game, and he gets it done in time to watch the All-Star Bingo game. Oh, garbage. Garbage. We're filling up our minds with garbage. 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 What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage? Mr. Thompson's factory, they're making plastic Christmas trees, complete with silver tinsel and a geodesic stand. Plastics mixed in giant vats from some conglomeration that's been piped from deep within the earth or strip mined from the land. And if you question anything, they say, why don't you see? It's absolutely needed for the economy. Oh, garbage. Garbage. Their stocks and their bonds, all garbage. Garbage. What will they do when their system goes to smash? There's no value to their cash, their world to be repaid, and there's no money to be made. Our kids will read in history books about financiers and other crooks, about feudalism and slavery, about nukes and all their misery, to history's dustbin they're consigned, along with lots of other kinds of garbage. Garbage! Garbage!
Science is not sufficient. Ecology is a word I first read in H.G. Wells 20 years ago, and I still don't know what it means, or seriously much care. Nor am I primarily concerned with nature as living museum, the preservation of spontaneous plants and wild animals. The wildest animal I know is you, gentle reader, with this helpless book clutched in your claws. No, there are better reasons for keeping the wild wild, the wilderness open, the trees up and the rivers free, and the canyons uncluttered with dams. We need wilderness because we are wild animals. Every man needs a place where he can go to go crazy in peace. Every Boy Scout troop deserves a forest to get lost, miserable, and starving in. Even the maddest murderer of the sweetest wife should get a chance for a run to the sanctuary of the hills, if only for the sport of it, for the terror, freedom, and delirium, because we need brutality and raw adventure, because men and women first learn to love in, under, and all around trees, because we need for every pair of feet and legs about 10 leagues of naked nature, crags to leap from, mountains to measure by, deserts to finally die in when the heart fails.
There's a magic in the air that I feel when I am there. It plays straight to my heart and lays it all to bear. It's in the cry of the eagle and the deer so meek and mild. It's in the rise of a mountain, let it stay forever wild. Forever wild, forever wild, let it stay forever wild. It's in all that is not tame, and some that can't be named. It's in the fog down in the valley and the scent of summer rain. It's in the scream of a lion when she's sounding like a child. It's in the song of a river, let it stay forever wild. Forever wild, forever wild, let it stay. Now the earth, it holds the key to all that shall be free. It's in the peace of the desert and the wisdom of the trees. It's in the grace of a swan's wing and the grizzly when he's riled. It's in all the love I bear it, let it stay forever wild. Forever wild, forever wild. fast but going blind. And the only thing they worship is their god, the dollar sign. We must fight them with our spirit, with our might and with our guile. We must show them that the answer, it must be forever wild. Forever wild, forever wild. Let it stay forever wild, forever wild, forever wild. Let it stay.
Forever Wild, Walkin' Jim Stoltz. Direct action. I say Ed Abbey understood direct action and direct action in the environmental movement. He also understood that one of the homes for that, one of the wells from that spirit of direct action in the environmental movement rose from, was from the radical labor movement, in particular the IWW and the CIO. Daryl Cherney understands that very well because, of course, Ed was one of his teachers, like as to so many of us. Daryl Cherney is an organizer and a songmaker with Earth First. He was the fellow traveling with Judy Berry when her car was blown up, and she was very badly injured, and he was wounded. Daryl, well, last time I ran into him was at the Cape Wolf Memorial Festival over there in Santa Rosa. No, actually up in Laytonville. Well, all right, let's listen to up there. Here's Daryl Cherney describing what Earth First is. You know, nature is all direct action. I mean, a fox doesn't apply for a license to go after one of the farmer's chickens, is it? Does he? No, he doesn't. It's taken me a long time as a direct actionist, as part of the radical labor movement, to understand political action, to understand that direct action and political action are two hands of the same body, and they can't keep slapping each other. No, that's wrong. Can't slapping each other. No, this is the right way. That's the wrong way. These two hands on that body, direct action, political action, got to be paying attention to each other, got to know what each other's doing, got to be able to cooperate. You know, there's simply not enough of us. We'll listen to Daryl Cherney talk about Earth First and then sing the song that he made up called Earth First.
We are not an organization. We are, in fact, a movement. What makes Earth First is that we are not a membership organization. You can't pay us $15 and become a member. Being an Earth First activist, you have to actually take part in some kind of action. That's a real fundamental principle with Earth First. We're not looking for members. We're looking for activists. And the philosophy of Earth First is, first and foremost, biocentrism, that biology must be at the center of our concerns. We don't want to compromise with, you know, a congressman over a three-martini lunch. We need to be able to state what is needed for the biological life support systems of this planet to survive. So with that caveat, we say no compromise in defense of Mother Earth. You know, for example, if a salmon needs a 68-degree stream temperature in order to survive, we can't compromise and make that 70 degrees because then the salmon will die. There's some things you just can't compromise. You can't compromise integrity.
Killing the trees, disrupting everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race. No compromise. mountains by the ton. Digging up that uranium.
Digging up that uranium.
Bald eagle looking for a place to land.
Bald eagle looking for a place to land. But it's all gone for a nuclear plant. No compromise in defense of the mother earth, earth first. Don't we know there's gonna come a time when the tables will be turned? What will we say to answer for these crimes and for our lessons never learned?
Daryl Churney, Earth First, an anthem. Yes, it's 10 years since somebody put that bomb under the front seat, the driver's seat of Judy Berry's car. She was organizing the Redwood Summer Project, sort of like the Mississippi Freedom Summer, but only in the Redwoods, and that's to save the last of the old growth. The last of the old growth of what was here 100 years ago, friends were talking about 5%, trying to save 5%, and they want that. Well, it was Judy, with her labor background, who came into the forest and started talking to the environmentalists about how they needed to be talking to the forest product workers. They needed to be talking to the mill hands, to the people working in the forest, you see, who she recognized that were going to be as much casualties eventually as the trees themselves. Here's a piece that Judy, one of her speeches she did at a workshop called How to Organize Loggers, and then a couple of songs. It's going to be hard for you to hear these songs. The day before that bomb went off, we drove in that car, she and I, from Willits down to Berkeley to a meeting, and I had this little handheld, inexpensive tape recorder, and I asked her to sing these songs she'd made up into it. So you hear the rumble of the car. The car made a lot of noise by itself, regardless of the road. But you listen close, and you're going to hear Judy Berry and her parodies of Paradise and Down in the Valley.
What everybody has been asking me for the last 2 days is, like, how do you organize timber workers? How do you organize loggers? How do you get loggers to talk to Earth Firsters? And the first answer is you have to like loggers. That's the first thing. And I already did because, you know, having been a blue-collar worker my whole adult life, the conditions of my life are actually more similar to them than to the privileged environmentalists in the city. So the espresso-sucking pavement dwellers, as we call them. But so being from a rural area myself and being a working-class person myself, I can relate for those reasons. But a lot of it really depends on your attitude. And the thing that happens is people who are more educated or who are from urban areas tend to really look down, especially on rural working people. And actually what I've discovered from a lifetime of being a non-achiever is that intelligence is not, it's equally distributed among the social classes. Dan Quayle is the perfect example of that. But there's a tendency of urban people to look down and consider the timber workers stupid, to talk down to them, to things like that. I've heard a 21-year-old college student say to a 45-year-old logger, "Do you know what biodiversity is?" And, you know, if you do that, that's the end of the conversation. So what I actually do is I just talk to people, that's all. I mean, it's been incredibly easy because there's nobody speaking for the timber workers out there. The wise use movement, the anti-environmentalists, those people are management. In fact, if you actually know them and who they are low-level management. They're fronting for the corporations, but they're not the workers. Nobody's speaking for the workers. The unions have mostly been smashed or corrupted themselves, and the actual interest of the workers is not expressed in the political spectrum in the timber wars. So what I did was, well, one of them is having some respect for them as intelligent human beings. Instead of telling the timber workers what to do, which is the other mistake environmentalists always make, I asked them. And I asked them to tell me about their working conditions and their lives. And the way I would meet them, by the way, is we'd blockade them. And, you know, here they are, and we're chained to their truck. They're not going anywhere. And, and that actually is really how I started meeting timber workers. And, you know, they're kind of curious about these people who are audacious enough to actually hike into the middle of nowhere in the woods and put their bodies on the line. You know, timber workers tend to be curious, and the cultural difference doesn't really bother them that much. You know, that's another object of curiosity. It's more just our attitudes towards them. So as I began to hear their stories, and I didn't even do this consciously, I began to give them a forum. I began to use my access to the locally radical newspapers to, you know, interview them and write about their conditions and what they told me. I used my radio access. I work on KZYX in Mendocino County, one of KBOO's sister stations, and I would, you know, bring the loggers on and stuff like that. So by listening to them, by asking them instead of telling them, I really not only learned a lot of wisdom from them, but also began to build this alliance by advocating for the timber workers' issues in the community. And it didn't have to be save the trees. I advocated for workplace issues separately, understanding that it's the same thing, you know, that the workplace issues are neither separate from nor subordinate to the forest issues. They're all part of corporate exploitation of the earth and the people.
When I was a child, my family would travel around Northern California where the forest still grew, where the mountains looked down over ocean and valley and the eagles still soared and the sky was still blue. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Northern California down by the Eel River where paradise lay, that's Eel. Well, I'm sorry, my child, but it's too late in asking. LP and Maxam have hauled it away. And sometimes we travel right down the Eel River to the tall redwood forest that covered the hills, where the trees touch the sky and the timber owl nested and the wildflowers bloomed in the air clear and still. Then along came the men with their dozers and chainsaws, and they ripped out the timber and tortured the land, and they clear cut the trees till the earth was forsaken and rode it all up to the progress of man. When I die, let my body fertilize redwoods. Let my spirit return to help heal up the land. The earth and the forest belong to the ages and not to the criminals running Maxam.
Or when I do it for LP or GP, I go, and I'll skip the Hear the Truth, folks. This thing takes forever, okay? Then it goes, Ganja loves sunshine, redwoods love shade. Look at the clear cut, the price we have paid. I worked in the sawmill since 79. Now I am standing on this welfare line. 2 million acres of redwoods cut down. The last of the redwoods are Mexico bound.
That's it.
Right.
That one's fun, actually. It's fun to do that late night. I have a million people singing all this stuff.
Back again. Now, Bo, you lie down. Lie down there, Bo. You enjoying yourself? Yeah, it's my good dog, my jolly dog, Bo, with the softest ears in the world. I want to make one of those ears into a sow's purse one day. Well, Judy Berry. Judy Berry was concerned with the human ecology of the situation we all find ourselves in. The understanding that the tails heap at the mouth of a mine, the slag heap at the smelter, all the slash that's left behind at a clear cut, this is all waste. This is all waste. But that we live in a system grounded in greed that wastes everything. It doesn't just waste the air and the water. It wastes people. It takes people in, uses them at the lowest wage they can get away with, the lowest benefits they can possibly get away with. And when it can't use you anymore, you're all used up, spits you out on the backside of town like you were garbage. And then when you're hard up and when you're up against it, tells you that you're failed. There's something wrong with you, not the system that put you there. All right? I wrote a song about that I sung around a good bit, you know, at folk music clubs and folk music festivals and so on. But finally, Marie Mason came along and recorded that song in such a way that you could play it on a roadhouse jukebox, which is right where it belongs.
He told me I'm all you.
lot of people have sung that, and some have recorded it, but that's the best I've ever heard, because that puts it right where I want it to be, and it puts it in the ears of the people that I want to hear it the most. Well, down at the Highlander School there in New Market, Tennessee, a school for organizers, really. Some years ago, I was handed a rifle. Well, I thought that was damned unusual, but what it was a 30-40 Krag, an old rifle, and it had belonged to a man named Uncle Dan Gibson. And as I sat there holding it, and I don't like weapons at all, I was told the story of Uncle Dan Gibson. Uncle Dan Gibson was a First World War vet. He came back, and an old man living there in the mountains, and the strip miners came in. And that's when people found out they didn't own the subsurface rights to the land that they had farmed for generations. The strippers came in, began to tear the mountains down. The wells began to run black sand. The streams began to run black water. Uncle Dan Gibson got angry. He crawled up those game trails that he'd known since he was a boy. He found out that a bullet from a 30-40 Krag would crack the motor block on a bulldozer. Well, I guess, and he didn't want to hurt anybody, but I guess he killed about a dozen bulldozers. Well, they came and got him, the highway patrol, and they took him into Harlan, Kentucky, and put him in jail. The town began to fill up. Well, now in that jail, mind you, there was a small jail, and they didn't feed. You gave the sheriff, a county sheriff, a dollar. He'd send the deputy across the street to a cafe to fetch the lunch back. Well, Uncle Dan gave him the dollar. As the deputy went out, he saw the town was beginning to fill up. Pickup trucks rolled in, and there were all these hill people coming in, loads of them in pickup trucks, a lot of them carrying shotguns. They just kind of stood around the jail and kind of stood around on the porches and in front of the stores. Well, the highway patrol had left, and finally the sheriff just put the keys to the cell on the table, and he left. And then those boys came into the jail and unlocked the cell and said, "Okay, Dan, let's go." Dan said, "I paid a dollar for that lunch, and I'm going to sit right here and wait for it to show up, and then I'm going to eat it." Uncle Dan Gibson. Now, there was a fellow who was stubborn and knew exactly what he wanted, and that's what the situation requires. Let's listen to an old recording of Jean Ritchie from the singing family of the Cumberland sing her song, Black Waters.
She sings a sweet time. In the roots of the tall timber, she nests with her young. But the hillside explodes with a dynamite's roar. And the voices of the small birds will sound there no more. And the hillsides come sliding so awful and grand. And the flying black waters rise over my land. Sad scenes of destruction on every hand. Black waters run down through the land. In the rising of the springtime, we plant destruction on every hand. Black waters run down through the land. Well, I ain't got no money in my plush of a home. I own my own land, but the land's not my own. But if I had 10 million somewhere thereabouts, I would buy Perry County and I'd run them all out. Sit down on the bank with my babe and my can and just watch the clear waters run down through my land. Well, wouldn't that be like the old
Black Waters, Gene Ritchie. One of the first times I talked to Judy Berry on the phone, and I had never met her, I said, Judy, you know, the earth is not dying, it's being killed, and the people who are killing it have names and addresses. What I mean by that is, through power structure research, through hunting very carefully, we can find out the names and addresses of the people who really have their foot on our necks, the people who are really causing the damage. And then, nonviolently, my vision, my dream is that thousands, millions of people go to those homes, go to the places where they shop, go to the places where they take their vacations, sit in the doorways, lie in front of the cars, and when they're hauled away to jail, other people take their place, surround them, put them in jail. Oh, yes, I know it's an air-conditioned jail and the food's pretty good, but they're in lager. They're surrounded, like in Montreal, like at Genoa. They're behind the barbed wire. They're behind the concrete. We've got them in prison. We've got to understand that. They're afraid of us, all right? Let's make sure that they can't enjoy their ill-gotten gain. We got to learn to become the eagle, to become the fox, to become the wolf, to become what we in fact are. Carl Sandburg is going to recite his poem about that. And then you'll hear a song that Dakota Sid Clifford wrote that he asked me to sing with him on, We Want the Whole Thing Back.
There is a wolf in me, fangs pointed for tearing gashes, a red tongue for raw meat, and the hot lapping of blood. I keep this wolf because the wilderness gave it to me, and the wilderness will not let it go. There is a fox in me, a silver-gray fox. I sniff and guess, I pick things out of the wind and air. I nose in the dark night and take sleepers and eat them and hide the feathers. I circle and loop and double-cross. There is a hog in me, a snout and a belly, a machinery for eating and grunting, a machinery for sleeping satisfied in the sun. I got this too from the wilderness, and the wilderness will not let it go. There is a fish in me, I know I came from salt blue water gates. I skirted with shoals of herring. I blew water spouts with porpoises. Before land was, before the water went down, before Noah, before the first chapter of Genesis. There is a baboon in me, clamoring clawed dog-faced, yawping a galoot's hunger, hairy under the armpits. Here are the hawk-eyed hankering men, here are the blonde and blue-eyed women, here they hide, curl asleep, wait. Ready to snarl and kill, ready to sing and give milk. Waiting, I keep the baboon because the wilderness says so. There is an eagle in me and a mockingbird, and the eagle flies among the Rocky Mountains of my dreams and fights among the Sierra crags of what I want. And the mockingbird warbles in the early forenoon before the dew is gone. Warbles in the underbrush of my Chattanoogas of hope. gushes over the Blue Ozark foothills of my wishes. And I got the eagle and the mockingbird from the wilderness. Oh, I got a zoo, I got a menagerie inside my ribs, under my bony head, under my red valve heart. And I got something else. It is a man-child heart, a woman-child heart. It is a father and mother and lover. It came from God knows where. It is going to God knows where. For I am the keeper of the zoo. I say yes and no. I sing and kill and work. I am a pal of the world. I came from the wilderness.
We're tired of seeing them politicians stealing things we'd be loving. You best be believing we've had it up to here with that compromise. Yakety 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 yak. We ain't fooling, we want the whole thing back.
We want room for the buffalo. The grizzly needs some place to go. Round up developers, move them on down the track. Jack, we ain't fooling, we want the whole thing packed.
The jailbird condor might have hope if the green people ever learn how to vote. We could close them roads down, move them off the map. We ain't fooling, we want some wilderness back.
We made a pledge, we'll be non-violent. We never said we would be silent. Stand up, people, now. Shout, protest, and sing. Forever wild, child, let your freedom ring. Yeah, we're so tired of seeing them politicians stealing the things we'd be loving. You best be believing we've had it up to here with that they compromise. Yakety yakety yakety. We ain't fooling, we want the whole thing back. Oh yeah, we ain't fooling.
Listen as the trees sing their songs in the wind, lyrics and melodies for the spirit's senses, songs of laughter and life, timeless things in timeless places. Do not be afraid to be strong, do not be afraid to love, but always remember. Always remember, love wisely, the love of being, free of possession. The love of being beyond desire. The love of being respect for Mother Earth. Listen as the trees sing their songs. In the wind, lyrics and melodies for the spirit senses. songs of laughter and life, timeless things in timeless places. Do not be afraid. Remember, the medicine is in the time. Live this life to last. Join the time of tomorrow and the past. Be like us. Serve the creation. We will endure. Listen as the trees sing their songs. Listen. Listen.
John Trudell, a man whom I admire enormously. You've been listening to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. My name is Utah Phillips, and I am, in fact, the golden voice of the Great Southwest. From Wendell Berry. To go in the dark with the light is to know the light. To go in the dark, go without sight, and find that the dark too blooms and sings and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings.